The next paper is Photoelectric Photometry in Downtown Toronto by Dr. John Percy from Toronto. Dr. Percy?
I subtitled this paper Smog-Bound Astronomy, but that didn't get as far as the program. Well, the purpose of this short talk is first to describe the installation and instruments which we have on the University of Toronto campus in downtown Toronto, and also describe some of the results which I've so far obtained. I'd also like to point out the advantages of having a small installation like this on a university campus, or for that matter, in even a small observatory set up by an amateur group. And perhaps a byproduct of this is for me to whet your appetite as far as the General Assembly for 1969 is concerned, because next year you'll get a chance to see this equipment. Well, this paper consists mainly of a group of slides, which I want to show you, of the installation which we have. And if we could have the first slide. The purpose of this rather unusual slide is simply to point out the relative position of this establishment relative to this brown structure, which is the garage behind the National Office, 252 College Street in Toronto. And there, up at the top of the physics building of the campus, are the two domes housing the 16-inch reflector and an 8-inch refractor. So you can see how close it is to the National Office of the Society. This picture here is the inverse of the first slide, because down below here is the back of 252 College Street. This is the Clark Institute of Psychiatry, and this picture was taken from the 14th floor of the physics building. This is looking in a slightly different direction at downtown Toronto, the new Toronto Dominion building, and the other large buildings. But the main reason I put this picture in is to show you this thing here, which is the smokestack from the University of Toronto physical plant. It is situated to the south of the physics building, and this is something that should be kept in mind. Despite the nearness of this smokestack, it was within stone-throwing distance, there were only three or four nights during the year when smoke was of any problem at all. So that as long as you're to the north or in a position which has been determined from the prevailing winds, then smoke is very little problem at all. You can perhaps start, well, there's the moon up there, that makes this an astronomical photograph. You can perhaps start to see some of the smog which we so often have in Toronto. I notice you don't have it so much out here. Well, this is just looking towards the University of Toronto campus, Harthouse here, and the main campus. But we're still surrounded by downtown Toronto. This is a picture of the physics building, 14 stories high, 16 counting the top two floors which house our instruments. And there again are the two domes, the 8-inch refractor and the 16-inch reflector. Well, this is a picture of the same situation taken at night here. There's the Toronto Dominion building, the Ontario Hydro building. I put this in mainly for some fun, but if we go on to this picture here, you start to see the rather turbulent picture of the sky here, and these are the things that we have to contend with in carrying out photoelectric photometry. Here is another photograph of the sky, And this brings out the very non-uniform characteristics of the sky. This is a rather typical night in Toronto. This is not quite a photometric night, but nights which are not unduly different from this were actually used for photoelectric photometry. In downtown Toronto, there are approximately 50 nights per year in which photometry can be done. This is compared to perhaps 70 nights per year at the David Dunlap Observatory, 15 miles north. The haze in the sky which you see here tended quite often to be there, but completely uniform. And under conditions of uniform haze, you can carry out serious photometry, as I will describe. However, you can start to see a layering of the sky here, and as soon as you have a layering of the atmospheric properties, then even by carrying out standard extinction techniques for correcting your results, you get into trouble. But there were only a few situations in which I found any difficulties due to this layering effect. The sky brightness in downtown Toronto is fairly great, especially on a night when the moon is out. However, in the southern part of the sky is actually somewhat fainter than it is in the southern sky from the observatory, simply because the observatory is north of the city. The sky brightness in the diaphragm that I use is about equivalent to that of a ninth magnitude star. So when you're observing a ninth magnitude star, you're observing half star and half sky. The instrument, which is installed in the reflector dome, is shown in this picture here, and it's this that I'm going to be talking about. This is a 16-inch Buller and Chivins reflector, and it costs about $35,000, though you could carry out a similar program, I think, at considerably less cost. It's used in its cast-of-grain configuration, and has a F ratio of about F15, approximately. Notice the versatility of the mount here. There's no problems with regard to reversing the telescope, and it has a very sophisticated means of slewing and slow motion, which have given us nothing but trouble ever since. The instrument which is used on the, these are just a couple more views of the telescope showing some of the electronics in the back, which is there to go wrong. The telescope is set by means of dials of declination, right ascension. This is an hour angle circle here. By means of a paddle, which gives you a variable slow motion rate, which is what has essentially caused us most of the trouble and will probably be replaced by a single rate slow motion drive. Here we're looking inside the telescope here. You can see the secondary mirror, the primary mirror, and the light baffle through the primary hole. The instrument currently attached is a photoelectric photometer, a set of diaphragms here to select a particular part of the sky that you're observing, a set of filters here, and a photocell back here. We use an EMI tube rather than a 1P21. For the type of work we do, it doesn't really make much difference which you use. The output of the photometer comes to this piece of apparatus here, which consists of a DC amplifier, which amplifies the current from the photocell. The current is then converted into a frequency by means of a voltage-to-frequency converter, which is here, and the frequency is simply measured by means of a counter, which is up at the top, so that it's relatively automated and could be completely automated if we wanted to. There are several uses to which we put this piece of equipment. We first thought of it as strictly a teaching piece of equipment, training graduate students and undergraduates to learn how to use a telescope. Since it's on top of the physics building, it's very convenient to the classrooms. We don't have to send our students up to the observatory to do their work. But we are pleasantly surprised to find that you could do serious astronomical work with this. I'll mention in passing that it's also used for visual work and also for photography, And we're hoping to start some globular cluster photography using this telescope in order to continue the work of Dr. Hogg. The work which I have done with this telescope during the past year has been differential photometry of stars. This means that you're always comparing the brightness of a star with the brightness of a standard star, which is less than about a degree away. And as long as you do this, it doesn't matter if the sky is slightly non-uniform. As long as it isn't non-uniform over very small angular distances. And the type of results which I get are such that the mean error of a single photoelectric observation is of the order of 5/1000ths of a magnitude. On a good night, the mean error will be as low as 3/1000ths of a magnitude for a single observation. This means that we can explore the variability of stars with amplitudes as low as 1 or 2 hundredths of a magnitude. And my own interest is in the field of the Beta Cephei and Delta Scuti stars, which are known for their very small amplitudes. Of course, we could work on eclipsing binaries, such as the one which Mr. Fitzgerald described. I doubt that we could improve too much over what he's done visually. But as he mentioned, the field of eclipsing binaries is very important because of the fundamental information which we get. We have been carrying out some work on an eclipsing variable which was discovered by Pim Fitzgerald of the University of Waterloo. Well, I think that the field of differential photometry of variable stars is the one field which we can do very serious research with using an installation of this size. But there are a couple of other fields that can be explored. One is H-beta photometry, that is measuring the absolute magnitude of stars by studying the strength of the hydrogen lines. And there's been virtually none of this done for declinations north of plus 60. And this particular part of the sky I hope to explore in the next year or so. You can do absolute photometry, that is UBV photometry. You won't get very good results, but you can at least explore the principles involved, and this would come under the heading of training of students. And I mentioned the globular cluster photography as well. Well, what then is the value of such an installation? Well, I think that an installation of this size is valuable simply as a training center for senior undergraduate and graduate students. You can train them to use an instrument of this type, and then they can go to perhaps better observing sites such as Kitt Peak National Observatory or the observatories in Chile and use similar equipment under somewhat better sky conditions. But I'm pleased to say that you can do serious astronomical work with a small installation like this. And I suggest that you could cut an installation like this down by several tens of thousands of dollars to something of perhaps $10,000 for a serious university installation. But for the amateurs, I encourage you to get into this field here, because with perhaps a 8 or 10 or 12 inch reflector and the expenditure of $300 or $400, you can get into the very interesting field of photoelectric photometry. Thank you. Are there any questions? Yes.
Yes, Dr. Percy, we have a volunteer telescope as well. For the amateurs, we have an undergraduate who's been doing visual photometry with this instrument. He has a photometer. He can do different photometry as Dr. Percy suggests here, but at a cost that is, well, let's say, a junk box type of cost, a few tens of dollars practically, and all he uses is a photographic film in the dark in a uniform way and compare this position where a star do very active photometry question or actually do like parents to he's also going to be in Los Angeles trying to get the same type of decision to be wrong.
Well, I'd like to encourage this sort of thing, but I'd also like to encourage some of the experienced amateurs to get into the field of photoelectric photometry. And if they wish to do this, there are books at the national office which can help you along. And I invite you to write in and ask for these books, and perhaps it'll set you going in this particular field.
Thank you, Dr. Percy. Is this it's interesting to note the advances in scientific equipment. Now they've got the telescopes where they put a chimney below it and have it built in bad seeing. Don't have to depend on nature for it.